Welcome to the Arts and Antique Radio Show, where your host, nationally recognized certified appraiser Elizabeth Stewart, Santa Barbara's treasure sleuth, will help you put a value on the treasures in your own home.
Every time it rains, pennies from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven?
So let's find out. How valuable is it?
Hello, 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 Santa Barbara. It's your chantress of everything valuable and beautiful, Elizabeth Stewart. So pleased you joined me today because there's three important topics I want to consider in order. And first is the Venice Biennale, a huge, big deal in the art world, international art world, where 110 countries have chosen small, not so small sometimes, pavilions. And each country has the chance to invite an artist from their country to actually do the pavilion in whatever they want to do. And some of these pavilions have come under a lot of fire, and I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. For example, the Russian pavilion has come under a lot of fire, a lot of protests. The U.S. pavilion has as well. It is the least attended pavilion in all of the nations. There's reasons for that. South Africa, Australia, and Israel. Those pavilions were the site of some protests. This festival is not even a week old as we make this recording, and there's a lot of controversy involved. And we're going to talk about some of those places, those pavilions, the scenes of some of the protests and why the protests are going on. That's topic number one. Topic number two is the wonderful new exhibition space and galleries at the Metropolitan Museum of Art for Costume and Fashion. This is a huge, big step for the Metropolitan Museum. And likewise, the Metropolitan Museum every year under the curatorship of the editor of Vogue presents the Metropolitan Gala. Metropolitan Gala, where the tickets are $100,000 a pop each, and you are allowed to show up in the theme of the show, which has to do with not clothing per se, but costumes. And some of the fantastic costumes that walk the red carpet, some of the celebrities and the stars in costumes that they had designed, echoing the actual designs of the new costume pavilion. Our last topic is going to be a very interesting blip in the art world, and that is the record-breaking sale of a toy in the Star Wars theme. Over $3.5 million for this toy, and that is a big record. I don't know what's going on with that, but we'll find out. We're going to investigate that. First, I want to start with set the scene a little bit, Richard. So the favorite pavilion, a lot of people have been writing about the Austria Pavilion at the Venice Biennale. So like I said, if you picture in your head every country, 110 of them participating, every country gets to have their own pavilion. And the pavilions are parts of Venice. Most of it's concentrated in the Arsenal area of Venice. But there are some outlier pavilions. Austria is a big controversial pavilion, not for any of the political messages, but because of what the exhibition is all about. So it might turn out to be the favorite pavilion of the year. And this by Biennale has been going on for years and years and years. And Richard, I actually attended one year. It's pretty fantastic. You go from pavilion to pavilion, kind of like a World's Fair, but it's more like the Olympics of the art world because each pavilion is dedicated to a certain star artist. And we'll talk a little bit about the U.S.'s choice for that. First of all, Austria. Well, why is it the favorite pavilion? Well, it's one room. There's a naked woman. She has an oxygen device, she's like a diver, and she's immersed in a tank of what looks like water. And flanking the tank, if you can picture this, Richard, are two porta potties. So there's a young woman, naked young woman, and she's hanging in this tank of water. Next to her are two porta potties. And on the porta potties, there's a request that it's just pee only. And they invite the visitors to use the porta potties. And you're thinking, well, what is that going? I mean, what has that got to do with this woman? Turns out that the woman in the tank next to those two porta potties is attached to a large filtration mechanism that actually filters the urine into fresh water. And this is a work of art, believe it or not. Now, halfway through the visit, any given hour that you're visiting Austria Pavilion, you will see a cleaning lady outfitted in waders and rain gear, and she's frantically from the back of the gallery to the front, mopping away to beat the band. She's frantically trying to clean up some mess. Well, at that point, the attendant at the gallery says, you know, we have to clear the gallery. Someone didn't follow the rules. They actually didn't stick to urine only in the toilet. And now we have a real crisis on our hands because we have, you know, fecal matter on the floor here in the galleries, et cetera. Well, you think to yourself, what happened? You know, this is craziness. I mean, why did this happen? But they do invite visitors to, you know, to urinate in the porta potties, and somebody had an accident, looks like. Well, Richard, that's the performance. Mm-hmm. That is the performance. Every hour this happens, nobody's supposed to tell anybody about it as they go out of the pavilion, but this is the work of art. It's about what we're doing to the planet, although it's a very sub message. But the real craziness of it is the scatological references, and people just think it's hysterical. This is the chosen artist that developed this concept for Austria. And this is the performance. It is the performance. Now, there's another pavilion that's making a lot of news, and that's the Japanese pavilion. And Richard, do you have time to comment on the Austria pavilion? What do you think about that work of art?
Well, I mean, it's wonderful that they're allowing public participation in the creation of the art. But quite honestly, I know that there have been art exhibitions, I'm sure you've seen them, where you have stuff from the bathroom, like somebody's got a toilet that's, you know, I mean,
backed up or something. Yeah, I guess it's a takeoff on that, but actually, you know, the naked woman in the tank is quite comfortable in the nice heated water that's been purified, but she's not obviously comfortable when the filtration device encounters a logger jam,
No pun intended.
No pun intended. Okay, the Japanese pavilion. The theme is babies. What is the Japanese pavilion consisting of? Well, it's a number of changing tables for babies. And parents and visitors are encouraged to use the changing tables for the babies. You know, the changing tables that you see where, you know, there's a table, there's a strap that goes over the babies, and there's wipes there, there's new diapers there. That's everything is there. And the artist, the Japanese artist who recently had twins, was frustrated with the lack of any kind of changing tables or any kind of infrastructure for babies. And she made a statement with her pavilion, with the Japanese pavilion. And that whole pavilion is baby friendly, filled with changing tables. Now, what do you think about that? That is also audience participation. And it's also having to do with somewhat scatological principles. So we're starting to see a theme here. What we're doing to the planet, you know, that's sort of the undertext is what the, I don't know, I almost said excuse for these sorts of installations. But what do you think about that one, Richard? The theme is babies, and the theme is, you know, many, many changing tables.
Well, I like the intent. All right. I like the intent. And at the same time, I am sure that even the statue of David was rather, rather risque, to the point where I've even heard in this modern age that there are those who want to cover up David.
Yes, absolutely.
And,
yeah.
And I know there'll be people who will say, no, this is this. These people, whoever they are, have gone too far. So, but I again, I like the intent. I don't know how much I care for the display, but I'm not going to say, well, they ought to take it down. No, because maybe that's the point. Maybe it's they're in a manner of speaking euphemistically, they're putting this message in the face of the people, saying,
yeah,
hey, wake up.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's you know, assaultive, and yeah, but it is effective in some ways. Now, Luxembourg, very small country, Luxembourg Pavilion at the Venice Biennale, they have done a video installation. And the artist from Luxembourg has done a video looping on a big screen, and it stars a normal, average woman and a man, but the man is actually a 6'2" pope. And they do, I know, they do a whole dialogue, and a rude dialogue at that, and they are, can I say this, they're falling in love. And it's so, sort of like a romantic comedy theme between the 6'2" man made out of poop and the young woman who's falling for this man. And I don't know the movie called The Substance, but it is replicating a certain part of the movie called The Substance. And I don't know, I've never seen the movie The Substance, but it has something to do with the movie. Anyway, it is also an assaultive thing. And my question is, why are these artists making work about waste products? Well, maybe it's a way of drawing attention to the large part of what we humans have been doing to our planet. Yeah, we've laid waste to it in some ways, I guess. Each of the pavilions is not bitter. When we talk about the Luxembourg Pavilion, the Japanese Pavilion, the Austrian Pavilion, they're not bitter, they're humorous. They're meant to make you laugh satirically. And, of course, that's very effective. How does that fit into the general theme of the Biennale this year? Because the general theme of the Biennale is very understated. The title of all of the work of 110 pavilions, part of what they had to follow was the general theme. Just like the Met Gala has to follow the general theme of costume, the Biennale this year has to, which is going on right now, as we record this, it's going on for a couple of weeks more. Each pavilion has been assigned to follow the theme. What is the theme? It's the title of the whole year celebration. And it's called In Minor Keys, like minor of a musical instrument, where it's not a major key, it's a minor key. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of a sad story, Richard. A year ago, the first African Swiss, I should say, artist was chosen, the first Black woman to lead the Venice Biennale. Her name was Koyo Kuo. She's originally from the Cameroons and grew up in Switzerland. She's an absolute genius curator. She has been curator for the major museum of African culture in South Africa for years. She was asked to curate the entire Venice Biennale. It's a huge honor. And a couple of months before the Biennale was meant to open, and she had named it In Minor Keys. That was the name she gave the theme of the Venice Biennale. She passed away. She was 57, and she passed away before this crowning achievement could be reached. at that point, five of the artists that she really loved took over the helm, and they kind of finalized her notes and her catalog, and they really came to the fore, and she, her catalog entry about the theme, minor keys. She references Toni Morrison's book Beloved and Gabriel Garcia Marquez's 100 Years of Solitude as her two touchstones. Why? It's because if you think about both novels, they have to deal with magical realism and imagination and things that are not in the major, like as opposed to minor, not in the major consciousness of humanity. It's the minor stuff. It's the subtle stuff. It's the symbolic stuff. And that's what she wanted to do, is places in the heart and in the mind where it's not necessarily about conscious survival, but about the things that really, you know, bridge between couple of worlds, maybe this world and the next, or this world and the dream world, or something like this. And so it's not right out there. It is the minor part of our existence that she wanted to celebrate. And what happened was, when she passed away, it was her mantle was taken on and celebrated by the artist at the Biennale. So, you know, I think it's a wonderful story of resilience, and a lot of the theme about the this year's Venice Biennale to 2026 has to do with resilience. And we'll talk about a little bit about what the resistance to some of the political messages have been in a little bit here. I want to switch over, Richard, to the Metropolitan Museum of Art, because there were a number of protests as well. It seems that you can't make a major statement in the art world without a protest of some kind. And the lead supporter of the new pavilion at the Metropolitan Museum of Art was Jeff Bezos, Amazon's leader. He gave, I think it was, I don't know how many millions to the founding of the new gallery of costume design at the Met. But he also gave $10 million to this year's edition of the Met Gala. And the Met Gala celebrates and supports the Metropolitan Museum of Costume Art. So this has led to some protests of Bezos. Why? Because a lot of artists don't feel that excessive displays of wealth mesh well with the subtleness of art. And a lot of artists also do not relish Amazon's role in the recent ICE raids. And so the idea was they were going to change their concept of what costume design was all about. And it seems that they've kind of tread on thin ice in a way. However,
once again, no pun intended.
Yeah, I know. So, however, the new curator of costume design at the Metropolitan Museum of Art is named Andrew Bolton. And so the opening exhibition for the new pavilion of costume design, the new galleries that were riffed upon by the Met Gala, has to do with costume art. And costume art is an attempt, as far as I can read, an attempt to bring costumes and fashion clothing in general into the world of fine art. And I do support that. I think that's true. How they did it was some way that I'm not sure I support. So take, for example, there is a very famous Pablo Picasso work from 1903. And I'm sure you've seen it. It's the Blue Period Picasso. And it is an old man, and he's kind of seen from the side, and he's kind of, his face is pointing down into an empty bowl, and it's called the Blind Man's Meal. It's quite a large art piece of art, and it's quite an important piece of art. Now, to make the point that costume design is fine art, the curator put the Picasso, which is the Blind Man's Meal, next to the three exhibits, I should say, of clothing and costumes made for the disabled. So you have the Blind Man's Meal next to clothing designed for people bound for wheelchairs, etc. And it's an interesting juxtaposition, because when you really look at it, what do they have to, what's the relationship between those two objects, between the painting and, for example, a designer who designs denim outfits for wheelchair-prone people. So the critics had kind of been all over this particular exhibition that combines artworks with costume. And it is one way to think about fine art at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, as a prop, not necessarily as a work of art, but a prop. And so many of the critics have been a little bit turned off by the juxtaposition. With every type of clothing, there's also an accompaniment by a work of art that has something to do with the clothing, but it's unclear what it actually means in relationship to the clothing. So you have, for example, Picasso's Blind Man's Meal, a fantastic work of art, next to mannequins in wheelchairs wearing denim by Levi Strauss and Company. It somehow, it may work for some people. I'm not sure everybody loves it. The some of the designers that are represented in the exhibition are some of my favorite designers. For example, Jean-Paul Gaultier. I love him as a designer. And some of the really big names in the design world are represented. Their works have been represented at the museum. And they have risen to the level beyond commercial designers, way beyond. Now they are exhibiting artists at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. So Issey Miyake is there, Givenchy is there, Yves Saint Laurent is there, et cetera. And so the show itself doesn't really place the costumes in perspective with the artworks that are next to it. And every, you know, like I say, three or four mannequins, which, by the way, are faceless, has this really interesting accompanying masterpiece of art next to it. This is at the new Condé Nast Galleries, and that's the people that put up the money for the galleries at the Metropolitan Museum. And this is a new opening, just happened this past month, and then just a week ago or so, there's a blockbuster exhibition was opened there. It's called Costume Art, and it examines the bond between the dress body and visual art history. Well, if they do it well or not is the question. And the actually what we're doing is looking at categories of bodies for this show, like we talked about the disabled body. Also, the curator Andrew Bolton at the Metropolitan has obviously done the fashion sinewy silhouettes, but he's also included pregnant bodies and aging bodies as his mannequin models. And likewise, you know, he's pictured works of art. He's hung works of art that have to do with pregnancy or have to do with aging. I get the allegory. Some curators and critics do not get it. And then, of course, you have all of the incredible, lavish displays of wealth at the $100,000 a ticket Metropolitan Museum gala that supports the Metropolitan Museum of Art's Costume Institute. and obviously Anna Wintour of Vogue has chaired the gala for years and years, also a commercial endeavor. Fashion is art, yes. Fashion is art, and to emphasize that, one of the artists that has been collected by the Metropolitan Museum was asked to come in a design that she made of her own clothing to the Metropolitan Museum. So it's a little, like some critics are saying, it, a little bit beating the horse about the head, you know. So, however, that happened. I encourage you, if you're listening to me today, take a look at the clothing that got marched down the red carpet for the Met Gala. Especially look at Beyoncé's outfit. Some of the, I mean, millions and millions of dollars that each celebrity spends on just the clothing is absolutely astounding.
I do have to say, we did watch some of the people going down the red carpet on the programs like Entertainment Tonight and Inside Edition. And there were two that were troubling to me. I'm not saying they shouldn't have, but the first one was of a woman, and I don't know who it was, I can't remember, who was wearing a dress, allegedly a dress, that looked more like she was infected with some disease that bloated her body. All right. I was brown and purple and black. And it's like, what is that? All right. Then there was another gal who had one of these enormous trains and had to have two or three people help. And
that was Madonna, by the way. That was Madonna with the enormous train.
She got upset with the people who were trying to help.
Oh, yeah. The peons. Yeah.
It's like, you're the one that chose to wear this thing. They can leave. You deal with it. I mean, give me a break. So those were
this is why there was a protest. The ostentatious show of so much wealth in the midst of what we're going through is, so this is, you exactly put the nail on the head there. Yes, that was Madonna with the train, a long train, at least, I would say, 30 feet long, and her two servants behind her. We're not carrying the train the way she wanted it, and she had a tizzy fit. And yes, that was caught on camera. Yes,
I just had to laugh.
Yes, that's right. So, okay. Now, what's happening with, do we have to go to quick break?
Yeah, let's take a quick break.
Okay, quick break, and then I want to talk about some of the fallout from the Russian pavilion, the U.S. pavilion, and the Iranian pavilion, which actually pulled off the list for the Venice Biennale. What's been getting a lot of attention is the U.S. pavilion, but it's been getting a lot of negative attention because of the political, I don't know what you call, scrutiny that the pavilion was under by the Trump administration to make the art itself reflect American values. In whose values? Well, necessarily not the artist's values, but the American president's values. And so this has led to poor attendance for the U.S., very bad attendance indeed, and protests. And so it's not necessarily, I know, it's not necessarily a great thing to have this thrown in your face as an artist, but the poor artist that was chosen to represent the United States is suffering because of this. So when we get back, we'll talk a little bit about the intersection, not the least of which, Richard, is the miles-long lines that the airplane travelers have to endure because of all the shutdowns, because they can't get into the country fast enough. And they're spending days sleeping in the airport just to get to the Venice Biennale. So there's a lot of political stuff happening around that. They're stuck in line in immigration lines forever. And the ironic thing was that was the opening night. So millions of people that were supposed to be attending the Venice Biennale were stuck overnight wherever they were going to or going from, I should say. And when they got to St. Mark's Square in Venice, a massive rainstorm opened up and the entire These poor peoples and, you know, all the artists of, we're talking about 110 nations attending. And so, yeah, it's a sad story. When we get back, we'll talk a little bit about the central theme of the Biennale and the Russia's inclusion in the theme of subtle minor nuances of a very symbolic life that art is supposed to convey to us, and why Russia Pavilion has been targeted. There have been, there's a group I'll tell you about, Richard, called Pussy Riots. Mm-hmm. They're actually Russian singers. They've actually targeted the pavilion, the Russian pavilion, with pink gas.
Oh.
And it's amazing, quite amazing. Protests outside of the Russian pavilion, protests outside of the U.S. pavilion, and, you know, as I said, protests outside of the Iranian dead space. There's no pavilion there. They pulled out. It's an interesting comment on the world today. We will say this, then we'll go to quick break. The Venice Biennale has never suffered from this kind of politicalization before. Mm. It's a major turning point in the world. And I thought we'd just talk about the dramas that have come out of this new world, brave new world, Richard.
Yep.
Of, you know, we don't like it and we're going to make ourselves heard. I want to first talk about the American Pavilion. That'll make your hair curl, Richard.
Okay.
If you had any left. Don't turn that down. Back in a minute. Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart, and we're talking a little bit about the Venice Biennale that's on right now. Some of the wonderful titles of some of the pavilions, you know, say 110 countries. This is 110 countries represented, and 110 countries get to pick their own artist. And that artist gets to do the design and the art installation of the pavilion itself. So the latest wrench that was thrown into the Venice Biennale for this year is that the jury would not consider any nation that had been charged. So they get to invite the nations, and they would not invite any nation that was charged with crimes against humanity by the International Criminal Court. So that would have knocked out Israel and Russia. And instead, Israel and Russia were allowed to join, and their pavilions, the Israeli and the Russian pavilions with the artists also, have generated widespread controversy. Politicians, artists, participation in of other artists from other pavilions, pavilions all over the world, have tried to get the board at the Biennale to exclude Israel and exclude Russia. And because the Biennale says that it's not a country, it has no right to remove the representation of a country that is recognized within Italy itself, because the Venice Biennale is held in Italy. And if Italy doesn't recognize these countries as being criminal actors, there's nothing that the Venice Biennale can do about it. That's what they're saying. Now, what do we have? What's at the Russian Pavilion? Okay, so the Russian Pavilion this year, no pavilion has received as much scrutiny as Russia. And that is because the EU itself has weighed in on the Russian Pavilion. It's titled, the pavilion has it. Each pavilion has a title, by the way. Russia Pavilion is titled The Tree is Rooted in the Sky. And the pavilion features 50 musicians, poets, philosophers, and they are all saying in their own medium that politics exists within temporary dimensions, whereas culture is communicated in eternity. And so in the project that was built inside the Russian pavilion, the culture minister to Russian said, in our new project, eternity prevails over monetary and momentary concerns. Culture rules over politics. And unfortunately, he said, some of the visitors do not understand what he's talking about. Well, okay. This is the first pavilion that was allowed to happen from Russia since the nation invaded Ukraine in 2022. And in 2024, Russia didn't participate because they were kind of afraid of the reaction. In 2026, they are participating. And Russia revealed its plans to come to the Biennale, and all sorts of artists and curators have said that they will not attend. The entire nation of Finland, the entire nation of Latvia has said they will not attend any of the celebrations at the Biennale unless Russia is asked to leave. I mean, you know, this is, again, something that is a new wrinkle in the history of the art world. It questions the neutrality of the Biennale in general and the neutrality of the art world in general. Well, you know, this is what happens now is the question. You know, each country that is participating is responsible for their own statements, and they also are responsible for curating the money that is given to them. I think it's like $2 million each, in a wise way. You know, this is. Let's talk about the U.S. pavilion now, Richard.
Mm-hmm.
This one has generated much controversy. A very famous and great artist, sculptor, Alma Allen. He's a male. He's a Utah-born sculptor. He is the U.S. choice to build the U.S. pavilion at the Venice Biennale this year. He has mounted an exhibition, which is called "Call Me the Breeze." And every piece in the collection, in the gallery, there's five galleries, every piece is by him. And the overarching narrative is abstract work that talks about objects. So there's molten bronze, and there's carved stone, there's fabric works, etc. And this is the first time in 30 years, because of the controversy that the U.S. is facing in the world today, that the artist is sadly saying, he's quoted as saying, this is the first time in 30 years I felt the need to explain myself. He has to explain himself. He's been on the defensive because he's accepted the invitation to make this art for the United States. It's one of the greatest honors an American artist can receive. But our State Department, the U.S. State Department, insisted that the artist's work reflect, this is a quote, Richard, reflect and promote American values. The artist was not allowed to promote DEI initiatives, you know, he wasn't allowed to promote. He was not allowed to promote equality, you know, principles, etc. He had to work within the parameter of what President Trump was saying was appropriate art for the pavilion. And to do so, a group was pulled together by the President's Council called the American Arts Conservancy. This was formed just to oversee the U.S. Pavilion at the Venice Biennale. The head of the American Art Conservatory was founded right before the artist was chosen for the Biennale, so that the artist, his name is Alan, could have a guiding body over him.
Mm-hmm.
First time this has happened in the United States. The guiding body has said that he, the artist himself, was to follow their guidelines from which to make his art. And this has caused some consternation. It's also caused a lot of contributions to be withdrawn, none the least of which is the Peggy Guggenheim Foundation. And some of the major donors of American art have pulled out because of the gag order on the artist itself. The artist is trying not to be upset by all of this, but he does not appreciate the fact that the most of the other nations have boycotted the visit to his galleries. It's unfair. He is not a representative. He has stated to the press he's not a representative of MAGA culture. He doesn't understand why it's such a big deal that people should look at his art. In the meantime, he's moved to Mexico.
Well, my reaction to that is, if I were the artist, I'd say, all right, you want it that way? You do it.
It's like, you know, this is such a privilege to be the one artist to serve. It's like the gold medal winner for a nation. Yeah. You know, it's a huge honor. Another interesting pavilion that I don't know how I feel about this, but I'll tell you, I had relatives in what was formerly East Germany. So my grandparents are from that area around Leipzig, and I had great uncles and nieces, and I have cousins all that live in the Leipzig area. And when I was young, when the country of East Germany still was East Germany, behind the Iron Curtain, I snuck in. My German was good enough, and I snuck in and visited a cousin of mine. Now, for the German pavilion, they have designed the pavilion in the architectural form of the buildings that were built in communist German Democratic Republic. And I can tell you, because I saw them firsthand when I was a college kid, these are like prison blocks.
Mm-hmm.
And so the German pavilion, if you go to see the art in the German pavilion, you pass through the facade, which looks like a prison block. And it's a reference to the former German Democratic Republic. Not sure about the level of taste on that one. But there you have it. I think it's also interesting that the minor keys is the theme, and they refused any kind of political statement outright. They said that if you had to make a political statement, you made it through art, music, poetry. There are many performance pieces in the exhibitions. And the exhibition itself, the artists involved are, for the first time, 64 women and 84 men. Women predominate for the artists. And there are also two artists who use they pronouns, so they're neither women or men. So, I mean, that's an interesting twist as well.
It is indeed. As we come to the close of this particular edition, this is fascinating. It goes to show how, I guess I could say, inculcated policy and government and politics and all of that are playing today in an artist's opportunity to be an artist. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Well, this is a new thing for the world. We will see how this very quickly. I promised I would tell you a little bit about the last Empire Strikes Back, a lightsaber sold for $3.6 million.
Wow.
The most expensive Star Wars prop to be sold. And then a Stormtrooper helmet also sold for a tremendous amount of money. And a, I wanted to tell you the Blockbuster sale was an Action Figure Authority certified. It's called a Boba Fett. I don't know what Boba Fett. It's a character. Star Wars. And that was a character, and it was mass produced by, you know, Kenner, the toy manufacturer. If you've got a good one, you can sell it for $1.3 million.
Wow, amazing. Well, thank you so much. This was to me fascinating.
I think so too. So the Metropolitan Gala and the Venice Biennale just this past week, if you're listening to me, and two major, as you say, controversial mountings of what has never been controversial before.
Yeah, amazing.
And the involvement between wealth and politics and the idea of art being a free voice seems to be in question. Absolutely. Anyway, that's my story for today, Richard. Thank you.
That's your story and you're sticking to it. Thank you.
That's right. Bye.